Good afternoon and welcome, listeners, to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip. I'm Jeff Pedro in with Mark Avery, and we're from SimTrainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. We're located at 2031 Dryden Road in Moraine, right across from DP&L. You can visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com, or you can give us a call at 937-293-3914. If you'd like to get on the show today, I encourage you to call in at 457-1290. That's 457-1290, and we'd be more than glad to get you into the queue and discuss any issues that you might have, anything relevant to firearms legislation or current issues that are applicable to firearms or the industry itself. I want to start off today's show by mentioning that there is a buying craze going on. I've discussed this with many people. Many of the items, not only restricted to certain classifications, but guns, accessories as kind of far down on the pecking order as cleaning kits are getting increasingly difficult to get. Consistent with the last 6 or 8 months of increase in sales, obviously there's a need for accessories, and that was just a natural kind of follow through to what was going on and continues to go on. Actually, the problem now is it's one of supply. The demand is out there, and it's as high as it was last year, but the supply right now is not available. And I've talked to several of the industry leaders and several of the manufacturers, and they're at maximum production. So it's hopefully just going to be a matter of time before they start to catch up with the demand. It's a good thing on the one hand, but I know just from a business standpoint, it's difficult when an individual wants a gun. Let's say they want a particular firearm today, and we can't get it for them. Well, by the next 3 or 4 weeks, they either get it at a different location or they move on to the next choice, and that has varying degrees of concern. First of all, we have people that come through the Try It Before You Buy It program, and they try 3, 4, 5 guns, and they find one they like. And if we can't find the one that they ultimately like, and they, quote, settle, unquote, for something else, that's not the best scenario. Now, the good thing about that is many of the guns that they use, they absolutely we try to encourage them to stay with the ones that are best suited for them, and many of the people understand that. Our philosophy at SimTrainer is that we want you to get a gun that you're comfortable with and one that you're competent with, and you can shoot proficiently and handle competently, and then you carry that gun, which kind of leads me to another issue. I've had recently in the last couple weeks had discussions with several people about people who go out and buy the latest, greatest thing, and that's what they end up putting on their hip when they're carrying concealed. And in some cases, there's no training in between the time they get the gun and the time they carry it. And the problem with that is regardless of the configuration, the guns all feel differently. Many of them handle differently. The functional operation is slightly different. And under stressful situations, you're going to remember that which you've done recently. And if you haven't handled the gun, that could be a catastrophic failure. And I want to encourage people out there that if you're going to change guns for concealed carry in particular, we want to encourage you to get to the range and get some practice time with that gun. The other issue is I certainly want to encourage you to go out and buy whatever you feel comfortable buying and go to the range and shoot it, but we recommend that you should conclude your shooting session with the gun that you carry for your in defense of your life or others. And the reason for that, again, is pretty obvious. Your mind will remember most what it has done recently. And if you end up going to the range and you shoot your friend's gun or you shoot a gun that you just recently purchased that may be totally different. And I'll give you a classic example, personal example, where I recently purchased a Smith & Wesson Governor, which is a revolver that shoots both the 45 long Colt and the 410 shot shell. And I was down on the range shooting that gun, and it's a lot of fun to shoot. And it has some interesting some very interesting draws that would make somebody consider that for personal safety, home defense, whatever the case might be. But at the end of that session, I concluded by shooting my own gun because that Governor, being a revolver, has a totally different trigger feel than my gun, and it also handles totally differently, and it also you load it differently, and I'm a firm believer that you need to conclude your session with something that with your own gun, because we want you to be at your sharpest point if you ever have to use your gun in self-defense or in defense of another.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, and it's something that a lot of people don't think about. as instructors, that's something that is pretty important for those of us who sometimes have to shoot somebody else's gun for demonstration purposes, or to find out that is it functioning the way it's supposed to? Is the problem related to the gun, or is it something that the shooter's doing? And then at the end of that time, we've shot some gun that's very different from the one that we normally carry. I typically go back and close out the session after the lesson is over, go back into the range and shoot my own gun a couple of times, you know, do a few mag exchanges, make sure that all of those automatic functions are set back to the way they normally be.
You know, there are some commonsensical exceptions to that, and the example I find most often is an individual that maybe carries a Glock 17 on duty if he's a law enforcement officer, and he carries either a Glock 19 or a Glock 26 off duty. A Glock is a Glock is a Glock, and they function identically, and there's not a whole lot of difference in the feel, the operation, the trigger. So that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a person who might go, like I was talking about, they carry a, let's say they carry a SIG P239 double action, single action, 9mm for personal protection, and then they go and they end up shooting an SP101 at the range because it's the Ruger SP101 is one of the more sought-after revolvers, and they're having a good time shooting it, and that's a great thing. But again, I just want to encourage you to give some thought to shooting your own gun, and it doesn't have to be a whole lot. You can close the session with a magazine or two, just getting used to handling your gun, and you don't have to shoot all the rounds. We recommend thing that we developed is a two-shot drill, where you're basically taking two or three magazines, you load them only with two rounds, and you practice loading, charging, getting your good grip, coming up, acquiring a good sight picture, and then firing accurate rounds and taking yourself through that process multiple times so you get used to handling the gun. Because the simple fact is this, and Mark and I and several other people have discussed this numerous times in private, but teaching people to fire accurately and be proficient is the easy part. Teaching them to handle the gun to a high level of competency is a challenge for us. I really believe that I can teach, and it's played out at the range. We've had kids as young as 8 or 10 and adults as old as 75 or 80, that teaching them to shoot the bullets accurately downrange, once we find the gun that's right for them, is the easy thing. But getting them to be totally comfortable and competent with the handling of the gun is the critical part. And I bring that up because just in the last couple of weeks, we talked about safety and some of the problems that are occurring with people who don't know how to handle their firearms. They get a semi-automatic pistol, they take the magazine out, and there's an assumption that the gun is unloaded, and they forget about the round that's in the chamber. That's part of the process, people. And I just want to – I just can't emphasize that enough, because incidents continue to occur whereby people who should know better – don't follow the basic rule, the first rule of firearms handling. You treat all guns at all times as if they're loaded, and then you take the proper precautions to ensure that it's not loaded, both when you're the person giving the gun to an individual to see and as the person receiving the gun to try out. So,
Jeff, let's go out to the phones and talk to Zot, who's calling from Huber Heights. Welcome to the show.
Good show, guys. Always enjoy it.
Thanks very much. How can we help you today?
I got a question. Obviously, there are penalties involved in making a false statement on your CCW permit.
Okay, yeah, true. Well, you would end up not getting your license if they're discovered.
And
you're certifying you're certifying under penalty of perjury that everything you say is true.
Is the only penalty perjury?
Well, as far as I know, there may be some lesser offenses related to falsifying an official document, but the perjury charge in and of itself is going to be significant enough.
What is the concern?
It's a messy situation. Somebody I know is basically carrying. He renewed his permit. He's taking heavy drugs, plus he's doing other drugs.
Okay.
And the permit's got a statement on here. I just looked at it the other day. Basically says to the effect that you are not involved with drugs.
Well, obviously,
involved,
prescription drugs don't apply to that.
So, unless you're abusing them.
Unless
you're abusing them,
right.
Or
taking them in some way or other off prescription.
Unless you're addicted to.
Okay.
Well, addicted to, if it's prescription drugs and the prescription includes that, I don't, you know, that's kind of a gray area. But if it's under doctor supervision, if it's something that you have to have it because of whatever the condition is that goes along with that, and if you don't have it, that's a problem. Some people might call that addiction, but if it's on under doctor's supervision and it's not being abused, that's a little bit different. But if there's non-prescribed, if we're or if it's being taken in some way other than the way the prescription is, that's a completely different problem. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And here again, you bring up a very good issue. You got to look at the intent of the law versus the letter of the law and understand, especially the way situations have played out, the intent of the law is to prohibit individuals from carrying firearms who would make bad decisions as a result of their being under the influence of alcohol and or drugs.
Being impaired.
Being impaired to the point where they can't make rational decisions. And that is a fine line. I will tell you that in law enforcement, being in law enforcement for 30 years, consumption versus impairment sometimes is a fine line, and you have to look at the facts and circumstances specific to each incident in order to pass judgments. And in the case you're talking about, I think the best thing at this point, given what you know, which like you know obviously a little bit more information than I know, you need to talk to your friend, and you need to encourage him to get in line. And if he's got an issue, he needs to resolve that issue and explain the potential consequences, which can be devastating to him and anybody else that he may come in contact with. And sometimes people just need to be jolted like that. In the society that we live in, prescription medication right now is one of the leading causes of death in the state of Ohio for accidental death for individuals between the ages of 18 and 30. It passed up car accidents in the last couple of years, which is pretty astounding when you consider the gravity of what that problem has been. So prescription drug abuse and in particular is beginning to be is continuing to be an ongoing problem, and just something that sometimes people need to have an eye-opening experience, and sometimes it comes from somebody close to them.
If they've got prescription, let's just say the prescription meds are all within the realm of there's a prescription.
Okay.
But if there's TCH on top of that, or THC or whatever it is on top of that.
Well, that's clearly illegal drug use. In addition to the most common abuse form is they have a prescription, but they're taking the drugs in excess of the prescribed manner. And now you're saying it's polydrug use, including illicit drugs. That's a very complicated situation. And, you know, you're faced kind of, now that you have that knowledge, you're faced with both an ethical and to a certain degree a legal decision to make. And, you know, I don't want to make your mind up for you, but it's your conscience you have to live with.
Yeah, I hear you, and it's coming down to some kind of decision. But,
yeah, it's a tough situation, but sometimes we responsible people have to make tough calls.
It's an interesting problem, isn't it?
Yes,
it certainly is.
Yes, it is, sir.
Okay, guys, keep up the good work. Show is always educational, always interesting.
Thank you very much for calling.
Yeah, that's a tough question, you know. And when you know somebody who is having a problem and yet they still have, you know, they're keeping their life together, they're doing what they can to make that happen. Maybe they're dealing with some serious medical issues. That's a tough challenge.
Yeah.
We're going to need to take our first break for the hour. If you'd like to be on the show, give us a call at 457-1290. And when we get back, we'll also talk to Cody, who's waiting for us from Springfield. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290. And now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio WHIO. And welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip. We are glad to have you with us today. Give us a call at 457-1290 if you'd like to be on the show. 457-1290 is the number here into the studio. Let's go back out to the phones and talk to Cody, who's calling from Springfield. Cody, welcome to the show. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. You're getting a little noise on your phone. Go ahead.
I had a question about the concealed carry laws in Ohio. I read that the Ohio Revised Code says that we're not allowed to carry a handgun loaded in our vehicle.
Is that
true?
That's true if you don't have a license to carry a concealed handgun. If you have a license and you're carrying pursuant to that license, which applies only to handguns, then, of course, you can have a loaded handgun. You can carry it any way that you choose. We obviously recommend that you be safe. A holster on your person is probably the best place, because that way you know exactly where it is and you can get to it. But there are several other options, ways that you can carry. And there are no restrictions on how you carry a loaded handgun in your motor vehicle, which is a change from the law that went into effect on September 30th of last year. So, yes, you can have a loaded handgun. It's just if you don't have a license, it must be unloaded. And unloaded means that you have no ammunition in the gun itself, and then you have no ammunition, any magazines or speed loaders that can be used with that gun. And that actually applies to any firearm, not just handguns, when you're carrying unloaded in a motor vehicle.
That sounds good. That answers my question. Thank you.
Great. Thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out and talk to Jason, who's calling. Jason, welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you guys?
We're doing fine. How can we help you?
Yes. I know you guys talk about concealed handgun classes, and we're just wondering if you could recommend any like tactical or AR platform rifle classes.
We offer several of those at Sim Trainer, and with the weather turning the way as nice as it's been, we're going to probably offer it sooner than later. Typically, we offer them in the spring and the fall, and because of high demand, our lead instructor was just in last week, and we've talked about ramping that up and probably getting one scheduled here in the next month. We offer a basic class, which is designed for people who have little to no experience with a M4 AR-type platform, and the focus of that class is on the basic functional operation, accurate firing, nomenclature, and the like. It's a great class because it's taught by people who have handled them very extensively in the military and in law enforcement and in the civilian world for many years, and it gets you up to speed real quick to where you can handle it. Then we have an intermediate, and then later on we'll be adding an advanced class for the people who have already been through the first couple classes. And basically the progression goes such that we're taking you out to longer distances and including some of the more subtle things about handling guns. We talk about optics. We talk about having some sort of a device to carry the gun on your person and things of that nature. But the basic class is designed basically to get you functional with shooting the gun out to 25 to 50 yards. And depending on the class's ability, we sometimes get as far out to 100 yards pretty quickly.
Yeah, sorry, the phone was breaking up. No, that answers my question. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks very much for calling the show.
There's a lot of people out there who are in need of black rifle training. They now call them what, military sport rifles or
modern sporting rifles.
Yeah. And
that's not anywhere near as scary as
right,
the
kinder, softer, gentler. But basically, they're looking at M4 AR type platform weapons, and we offer that training at Sim Trainer. And like I said, we're going to ramp that up here in the next couple weeks because the weather's turned, and since we do part of the class outdoors, it makes it more enjoyable.
Did we have a winter this year? Sometimes I wonder. We're going to need to take a break here in just a few seconds at the bottom of the hour to go out to the news. But if you'd like to be on the show, call us at 457-1290 and we'll get you up on the board. When we come back, we'll also talk to Bob in Springfield who has a question for us, and we'll take your calls as well. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio WHIO. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery in with Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip. If you'd like to be part of the show, call us at 457-1290. 457-1290 will get you into the Master Control Studio and get you up on the board. This show is sponsored by Sim Trainer, and Sim Trainer is Dayton area's leading indoor shooting range and firearms training center. If you have more information that you'd like to get about that, you can check our website at sim-trainer.com. If you're interested in finding out more about the radio show, sim-trainer.com/radio will get you that information, and it will also take you to our Shooting from the Hip fan page on Facebook, get you a link to our podcast, and also our other sponsors, Old English Outfitters, Stephen T. Pearson, our attorney at law, and Crossbreed Holsters, and you've probably heard some of their ads during the breaks. Let's go back out to the phones and talk to Bob, who's calling from Springfield. Bob, welcome to the show.
Yeah, I got just a quick question.
Okay.
I heard you talk about the governor made by Smith & Wesson. How does that compare to the judge made by Torres? And also, that I wanted to mention, I really enjoy your show. Thanks.
Well, thank you for listening. We're glad to have you. And it's interesting you asked that question because the main reason I got the governor was because of a problem I had with the Torres judge. And basically, my personal assessment of my evaluation of the Torres judge is that it has what I call a multi-phase trigger that is inconsistent in that as you pull the trigger, it breaks and or binds at differing locations each time you pull the trigger. I don't know what that's attributed to, but I ran a couple of boxes of ammo through it when we got it in because the judge came out a couple of years ago, well before the governor. And then when I went through the T&E process and got rid of that gun as quick as I could because I recognized that it had some problems.
That's test and evaluation for those who aren't into the...
Yeah, we actually test them out and because we want to be able to make recommendations based on actual experience. And I also had an opportunity to shoot a second one just to make sure that it was not the gun that was sent to us as part of our range program, and it had the same inconsistent trigger pulls, which contributed to an inaccuracy issue because you start to pull a little bit harder because it binds up. That's the best way I can describe it. And I will tell you that once I shot the governor from the beginning, it was a very smooth trigger pull throughout, and it was just amazingly better, quite frankly. I'm basing that on a fairly consistent and similar protocol that was used in how we loaded the gun and how we handled the gun. And I found that the governor is just simply a superior firearm.
Now, to be fair, we've only had a couple of them to test, and it's been a while, so they may have made some improvements. It's possible that even it was just a couple of the ones that we had. But, you know, let's face it, Smith & Wesson is probably the premier revolver maker in the United States and has been making those wonderful guns for a very long time. So I can't say it's completely a surprise that they would have another one with a good, nice trigger on it.
I would say that
Where's the price line comparison on them?
You're going to pay a pretty significant amount more. And again, I don't want to get particularly in prices because prices are all over the charts, okay? I'm going to guess on average you're going to pay $100 to $150, maybe even close to $200 more for the governor. However, you're getting a far superior gun. And the best way I can tell you and other listeners to do this is when you go to the gun store and you ask to compare them side by side. And after you check, double check, and triple check, make sure they're unloaded, and you ask the retailer if they'll allow you to dry fire the gun, just do them side by side. And I think anybody that tests those out side by side would see the clear difference and the advantage of the governor over the Taurus Judge. But as far as price goes, I would spend the money every day for the quality that you're going to get in Smith & Wesson. As Mark mentioned, Smith & Wesson, one of the leaders, if not the leader in revolvers for the history of the modern gun era, and them and Colt have always done great jobs. And that's not to say that Taurus isn't doing some good things with some of the things that they have going on, but I will tell you in the comparison side by side with those two guns, the governor won by a big distance.
Do you know if Sim Trainer has any of those in stock presently?
We will have the governor on the range program in the next month or so.
Okay,
I purposely ordered a series of guns that we thought were going to be popular. The one that's probably getting the most attention right now is the Beretta Nano, and I just don't want to throw a whole bunch. We also have the Ruger SR22 and the Smith & Wesson M&P22, and I just don't want to overload our audience, and we're going to kind of break these guns in stages over the course of the year.
And let's face it, there's only so fast we can actually get them in, because Some of these guns are pretty popular.
Yes.
We get them when we can get them, too.
Yep.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay.
Bob, thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out and talk to Harry, who's calling in from Troy. Harry, welcome to the show. How can we help you today?
I just wanted to know if you'd heard anything about a Vermont-style carry law coming to Ohio.
Okay. There is a bill that's pending in the Ohio legislature. That would be HB 256. Your phone is really noisy, so I'm going to pot you down for just a minute, and we'll come back to you. But HB 256, sometimes called constitutional carry, it's not exactly constitutional carry. It's not exactly Vermont carry. What it would do is reduce a lot of the restrictions. It would eliminate the need to get a license. You would still have to be trained, and you'd have to carry the certification for the training. So it's definitely would be less restrictive than what we currently have if it were to pass. I haven't seen that there's any change in the status right now. I don't think it's even had a hearing in the Ohio House. But that is something that's pending, and we'll have to see what happens with it.
Okay. Well, thank you. I just heard it from an individual, and I wanted to see if you knew anything about it. So thanks a lot.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling the show. Let's go out to Arnie, who's calling from Marysville. Welcome to the show.
Hello?
Hi. Be sure you turn your radio down.
Yes, sir. Turned it off here.
Okay.
I've got a comment on the individual that was commented a little while ago that he had a friend that he believed that did some perhaps falsification or at least untrue statements with his concealed carry license that he has, along with taking some illegal and illicit drugs.
Right, go ahead.
To be quite honest with you, whenever you sign that application and certify that you are not addicted to any type of drugs, et cetera, that'll cause you any type of mental issues as far as judgment, et cetera. And if he does that knowingly, he is actually committing a felony. There could be some jail time and certainly monetary fines with that. Plus, it should, you know, God forbid he get into a situation where, you know, if he actually got into a confrontation and shot somebody, et cetera, he would be in a world of trouble that he couldn't believe how much it's going to cost him in the long run to get out of.
Well, that's exactly where I was headed with mentioning that it's going to be a tough call for his friend to step up to the plate and address the issue. I'm not necessarily going to go so far as he's going to turn him into the local authorities, because that's a personal decision he has to make, but he certainly needs to confront the individual and get him to the point where he can address his problem and take care of it and get himself in a situation where those circumstances don't exist. And it is a tough call, and you're exactly right. There are stiff penalties, as there should be.
Oh, absolutely.
There should be, because the bad judgment, more than anything, is the issue that comes to the fore here. And you get people who are impaired by drugs and or alcohol and combinations of drugs. They make bad decisions to even get involved in situations, let alone use their firearm when they probably shouldn't. So it's a serious issue. It's a serious issue, and it's something. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
You're 100% correct. And the other thing that they need to understand, that when somebody, and I've got some friends, thank God I've never been involved in one of them myself. I've never had to use my weapon to protect myself or somebody else. I have friends that have, and I can tell them that even the ones who were, and thank God all them that were in, got put in that situation, were clean on everything, and it was a clean shot. Believe me, by the time they got done with everything, they had been given blood tests and everything else. They rule out nothing to ensure that it was a righteous shooting.
Right, right. It is a pretty extensive process, and you know, we tell people that responsible gun ownership carries with it a lot of responsibilities in a lot of different areas, and it also means you're going to be scrutinized if and when you're involved in a situation where you use your firearm in self-defense. And the good thing is, like your friends, they come out clean because they are responsible, they're doing the right things, and they're not involved in those behind-the-scenes things that are going to cause complicating factors to make an otherwise good shoot muddled or muddied.
And you're absolutely correct, and I just hope that individual goes and does talk to his friend, and, you know, his friend's ultimately the one's going to have to make the decision of whatever on it, you know. And that's basically all there is to it. You know, it really, the burden of proof and all lies upon him and nobody else.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out and talk to, I think it's Amos in Lima, Ohio. Welcome to the show. Did
Good
I get the name right?
Afternoon. Sorry?
Did I get your name right?
It's Amos.
Amos, okay.
Like the old biblical prophet who was a pain in the butt to everybody.
Okay.
Living here about 60 miles north of you in the Black Swamp, my concern is home invasion.
Okay.
If the bad guys get past the big dog and into the house, do you think I should reach for the Mossberg 590 first or the semi-automatic Saiga 12 first?
I don't think it matters either way. And you're in
which one's closer?
Yeah, yeah. And I would say the one that you're most competent with, and you are kind of in the – you went from the frying pan into the fire. Lima has always been a tough town, but as economic downturn, I imagine you're feeling the same stress and strains that some of the other northern steel and coal and railroad towns have felt over the last 20 or 30 years, and it's probably gotten more exaggerated over the last year or two. And it is a tough situation, but relative to which gun to pick, it's again comes down to which you're most competent and capable. They're both good choices for home defense. I just encourage you to, if you haven't already done so, make sure you know how to handle it. Make sure it's in the condition ready that when you go to get it, you don't even have to think about it. It's just going to be a matter of either racking around the chamber and or taking the safety off and or just taking the safety off, depending on how you keep it for home safety based on your individual circumstances, that you're totally capable and competent with the gun. But as far as which one you use, it comes down to which ones you're comfortable with.
Whichever one, I mean, really the one that you have with you or at the closest hand. A lot of people say, well, I've got a shotgun in the house. I don't need to carry a handgun when I'm there. But if you don't have that gun readily accessible at the point where you need it, then you're going to need something between the time that the threat first presents itself and you can get to that shotgun. So really it is a matter of whichever one happens to be where you are when you need it.
They're both adjacent to the bedstead, and minor children are instructed to stay away from there.
Well, again, let me just address that issue now that you brought it up. Instructing the kids to stay away, in my opinion, and based on how it's played out, isn't enough. You, as the responsible gun owner, have to take the adequate precautions that the child can't get to it if he gets curious or his friends get curious, just telling them not to. One thing I learned, peer pressure supersedes adult supervision and adult guidance the majority of the time. Now, that's not true for all kids, but I just want to encourage you. You sound like you've got a good head on your shoulders. And, again, I don't know all the particularities, but based on your last comment, I just want to make you real aware of the fact that just telling them isn't often enough, and take the precautions to make sure the gun cannot be obtained and or used in an improper manner by anybody that shouldn't have it.
Let me refer you to one website that I refer a lot of people to because it has a lot of good information about kids and guns, and that is The Cornered Cat. It's corneredcat.com, and it's a website that's written by and hosted by Kathy Jackson, who also happens to be the managing editor of Concealed Carry Magazine, the journal of the United States Concealed Carry Association. She has some great information about having kids and guns, having the family well-trained with firearms, gun-proofed, if you will, for the kids that are younger, and how what she does in order to make sure that all the kids understand all the rules and practice with those rules and make sure that they recognize, this is the situation that we could deal with. We do have firearms around the house, and it's something that you need to understand for yourself. And if your friends ever ask you questions about firearms, work through some of those answers to kind of role play that a little bit and make sure that you have that they have the correct answer, that they're really on the same sheet of music. That's corneredcat.com. Amos, thanks very much for calling the show. We need to take our last break for the hour here in just a few seconds. If you would like to be on the show, call the studio at 457-1290. 457-1290 will get you into the Master Control Studio when we'll be back after this break. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio WHIO.
This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery with Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip. And let's go quickly out to the phones and talk to Blaine, who's has a question. Blaine, welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. Thanks. So I'm a new caller. I apologize for that. But so I'm not sure if you had addressed the question I have before, but it's regarding, so I recently got the Ohio concealed carry license, went through the classes and all that. But I was curious how you felt about some people that I've talked to have gotten multiple state licenses and the implications of that, or any legalities or any
sure.
opinions on that.
Well, it depends a little bit on where you need to go. If you are going to carry just on your Ohio license, there are some states that simply don't recognize it. Texas, for example, or Georgia, Pennsylvania. If you want to go to those states, then you need to get another license that would cover you in those places if you intend to carry while you're there. Are there any places, any states in particular that you travel to on a regular basis?
Well, for example, if you go from the north to the south, then, like some people say you should get, maybe if you get Florida, that covers going from Florida to Michigan.
Sure. Yeah, it does. In my case, I got a Pennsylvania license. Pennsylvania gets me Pennsylvania, obviously. It also gets me Georgia, and it gets me Texas. It used to also get me Louisiana, but we now have reciprocity with Louisiana, so that's not an ad. Florida will also get you a lot of those same things. There are some states that you're simply not going to be able to carry in. For example, Colorado does not recognize a non-resident license, and because of the way their laws are, they don't have a way to sign reciprocity, so we can't recognize their license, and therefore they won't recognize ours. There's no way around that right now until there's a change in law on one side or the other. So,
I guess Illinois is similar.
Well, Illinois is not similar, except that they don't recognize any licenses and don't issue any licenses, so there's simply no way to conceal carry in Illinois.
Right. So then you have to just figure out the local laws there.
Exactly. It's kind of it's a game that we call concealed carry bingo. The real fix for it is there's a national right to carry reciprocity bill that is currently pending in the Ohio Senate. In the U.S. Senate. It's been passed by the House. It's sent over to the Senate and is resting in committee, waiting for nothing to happen for a while. If that bill gets a hearing in the Senate and gets passed, gets sent on to the president for signature and he signs it, or he doesn't sign it and vetoes it and it goes back and both chambers override the veto, then your license will be much more like your driver's license. You don't have to get a different driver's license to drive from California to New York. You just get whatever license that is your resident, and then you drive wherever you need to, just following the laws of the state that you're in. Obviously, you have to know what those are, and they do vary much more widely with firearms law than they do with concealed carry law. But as long as you follow the laws of the state that you're in, then you'd be okay. Until that passes, we're going to have to play this silly game of what other states do I get a license for?
Okay, sure. Well, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you very much for calling.
You're always welcome to call in. One other issue I just want to address relevant to that discussion was that we at Sim Trainer, we think it's very sound judgment that you get Ohio license first before you go seeking out-of-state license. We think it just makes good sense. If you live in the state of Ohio, you should get the state of Ohio license, and then if you choose to get the add-on license, that's the proper way to go, as opposed to what some people do, either because of financial concerns or because of their unwillingness to participate in the training process. They may go to a different state and get that license just because it gets them their home state in addition to some of the other states they want. Certainly from a legal standpoint, on its face, you're okay, but in common sense, we advocate that you do what you just did or what the last caller did, and they get Ohio first, and then they go from there.
And if you don't get Ohio, any of the states that don't recognize a non-resident license will not do you any good. You must have your Ohio license in order to carry in states that recognize only resident licenses. We are out of time, and I thank you very much for joining the show. Be with us again next week at 2 o'clock when we will be back with another episode of Shooting from the Hip. Stay tuned now for There Is a Season with Bob and Gloria. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.